This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hello and welcome to Save, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about rendang.
Yes. Yes. Any reason this was on your mind, Lauren?
It has been on our list for a very long time, and I was kind of looking at the list, and I was going, I want to eat that right now, so why don't I make the craving worse by reading about it for 3 days straight?
Yep. Yep. As is the way of things. that list, I need to update it. There's a lot of things that the list is very long, listeners.
Oh, yeah.
And I have been slacking, and I do keep all of the ideas, but we need to wrangle the list. Is
yeah.
What you're saying.
Yeah. Right. There's like hundreds of entries in this spreadsheet, and it definitely has some duplicates in there. There's some, we have not been good list curators.
No, and I'm good at list. so this is a real failing on my part. I will say I don't remember seeing this on the list. What is probably more likely is I saw it and I didn't know what it was. So I just...
Your brain sort of skipped over it, yeah.
Right, but when I was doing this research, I immediately was like, no, I'm getting this. And we kind of had to delay this recording, and I was like, great, I'll get some before we record, and I did.
Yeah.
And it was delicious.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It was so good. I loved it.
Oh.
I ate off it for 3 days, even though it was like not that big, but it's quite filling.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was very, very good. I was going to get the chicken version, but everything I said was like the beef version is the one you should get. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
Okay. Did you, can I ask what Atlanta restaurant you found this at? Do you remember the name?
I don't, but I remember vaguely the name.
Okay.
It was like, I think it was Top Spice.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because they, honestly, I found four places that had it. And take of this what you will, but Top Spice had a lunch option.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way cheaper than everything else. And it was still not cheap, I will say. But it had a lunch option that was cheaper. And yeah. I wasn't looking to, like, get a whole meal to share with people.
Sure.
I was just wanting to
You just
try.
Wanted your unit of rendang.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it fed me for 3 days.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So they're going to, they're like a Thai Malaysian restaurant. So I wonder if you had a more Indonesian slanted version. If I need to compare notes across multiple rendang experiences now.
Okay. I'm into it. I struggled to describe taste, but I was keeping it in mind when I was eating it. I was like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But you've had it.
Oh, yeah. There are a number of Malaysian and or Indonesian restaurants around Atlanta that I really love. And that I don't get out to that often anymore, partially because I used to live on the corner of Buford Highway. And that is, if you are familiar with Atlanta, that is where many of our Asian subculture restaurants opened up. So.
Yes. Well, it was delicious. And I told Lauren, it's always nice when we get a topic where I'm like immediately, okay, for research, I must try this dish.
right. Purely for research.
Purely. Well, I guess that brings us to our question.
I guess it does.
Rendang. What is it?
Well, rendang is a category of dishes or a method of cooking in which a main ingredient is cooked low and slow with coconut milk and pungent herbs and spices until the liquid has been reduced and or absorbed entirely, giving you a richly stewed main ingredient in this like thick, flavorful, reddish brown to brownish black kind of paste of a sauce. The main ingredient is traditionally beef, but can be anything that stands up to this kind of low and slow cooking. Chicken, oysters, different kinds of fish, vegetarian options like jackfruit or various greens, all of those are popular. It's usually served with rice and some vegetable side dishes. And yeah, it's just, it's rich and warming and like satiny. Usually with a little bit of like saucy grit from the cooked down coconut gravy sort of stuff with, sweet, tart, spicy notes from ingredients like ginger and lemongrass and chili peppers and like all kinds of nutty, buttery, roasty, toasty flavors from the cooking process. It's like starting with just a really nice coconut curry and then evolving it like a Pokemon into something that's related but also very different. It's like reducing an entire delicious stew into just a single hunk of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
that is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's literally.
Also, Andrew, gonna love that Pokemon reference. So,
we are morally obligated to catch all of them. It is true.
Yes.
All right. So those spices are going to be doing a lot of the work and eventually flavoring this. And the herbs and spices used can vary, but some common ones include, yes, chili peppers, sambal, which is a chili sauce, ginger, galangal or galangal. Still don't know how other humans say it. Write in. Lemongrass, alliums like shallots, garlic, and or onions, bay leaves, lime leaves, turmeric and or turmeric leaves, nutmeg, coriander, cumin, palm sugar, grated coconut meat, toasted coconut. I've also seen cinnamon, cloves, star anise, cardamom, tamarind, sour mangosteen, other sour fruits. And again, the term rendang can refer to both the finished dish and the cooking method used to get there. What you're looking to do is take the sauce that you're cooking that main ingredient in through three distinct stages. The first is called gulai, and this is the thin kind of soupy mixture that you're just getting started with. You cook that down into what's called a kalio, which is a thicker sauce akin to a nice curry. But right, what makes this dish special is that you then continue cooking it until the coconut milk actually breaks and the fats in it separate out from the solids. So it's like making browned butter, but with coconut milk instead of, you know, butter. So you're sauteing all of the good stuff in your sauce, the herbs and spices and all of those flavorful coconut solids in that coconut oil. And all of that is infusing into the main ingredient and mixing with any juices that the main ingredient is giving off as it cooks. You have to stir it constantly at this stage, from what I understand. You're employing both caramelization and the Maillard reaction. And yeah, you wind up with just like a deeply browned, thick paste type sauce and a very tender main ingredient, fall apart meat, just absolutely silky veg. This is usually served either family style or individually plated with rice, various side dishes, and condiments like sambal. And because the whole process takes a few hours and like a lot of vigilance, it is traditionally a celebration dish. There are all kinds of variations, from what herbs and spices you use to exactly how dark the sauce is to how much you let the main ingredient dry out in the pan. Some people prefer like an almost crisped on the outside beef rendang. Some people like it a little bit stewier. Yeah. It is a dish that has been localized in a lot of places around the Malay archipelago where it's from. You know, like localized from city to neighborhood to household level. Like, people have preferences. It is one of those lovely family dishes that, you know, whatever you grew up with is probably the high that you are still chasing.
Yeah, I read a quote that was like, the one you think is the right one is the one your mom made.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are also a lot of riffs on the dish, both locally and out in the wider world. Like, you want some rendang lasagna, rendang sliders, rendang tacos? I do. Sure. Why not?
Absolutely. Well, what about the nutrition?
Oh, that depends. I cannot tell you that. It depends on what goes into it. But I will say that it's a popular enough dish that there are actually kind of a lot of nutritional science studies that have been done recently into like how different preparations affect both palatability and bioavailable nutrients. So more research is being done. You're welcome.
Yes, because we definitely played a role in that. So send your things our way.
Right, yeah, definitely.
We have a couple numbers for you.
A couple, yeah.
Yes. A CNN poll out of 2017 that received about 35,000 votes named rendang number one on a list of the world's 50 most popular foods.
Yeah. This was a Facebook poll. So, you know, like maybe not the most scientific, but still impressive.
Sure.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Indonesia's Record Museum has recognized the largest dish of rendang as having been created in 2016. A group of chefs cooked down over 600 kilos of beef. That's about 1,300 pounds for over 24 hours. They also have a record for the largest rendang cooking demo, which had 1,000 participants and took place in 2018. I also do understand that there's a rendang festival in Padang in Indonesia every year, but I couldn't find out that much about it. I think it's a cooking competition. I think there are hundreds of participants every year. Y'all are going to have to write in.
You're going to have to.
Yeah. This is important.
It is. Very much it is. Along with any recipes, images,
oh,
thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. Personal stories about it. Yeah.
Oh, indeed. But in the meantime, there is quite the history to get over.
Oh, there is. And we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsors.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so the written record around rendang is pretty sparse until fairly recently when a lot of people have been writing a lot of very fascinating detailed stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But there is a lot going on here, so bear with us. This is kind of a twisty-turny outline, I'll say.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But experts believe this dish originated in West Sumatra, Indonesia, by the Minangkabau people, a culmination of influences ranging from India, Islam, and Portuguese. Other things, too, but those were the three big ones. There are some really great resources that dug into this. And we're going to break it down a bit here, but just know that there's a really layered history.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And some things I read subscribe strictly to one theory. Some a mixture of all three, some a mixture of two, like a mix and match.
Yeah. Yeah. And right. The reason that there aren't a lot of written records until relatively recently is partially that the Minang people were mostly using oral history as their record keeping for a very long time. So,
yes. And then just general historical terminology, etymology, confusion.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.
Yep. But okay, let's break down those three things briefly, because again, if you want to learn more, you actually can. And it's very interesting and very exciting.
Yeah,
that's not always the case for these. But all right, let's start with India. One popular theory ties the history of rendang closely to Indian curries. As early as the 2nd century CE, traders from India were journeying to the Indonesian islands in hopes of finding minerals like tin and gold. Due to their strategic location between China and India, these islands became a popular hub between the spice trade of these two countries. And this is when a lot of spices involved in rendang were probably introduced to West Sumatra, like ginger, turmeric, chili. These roots led to a blend of influences in the region, Arab, Chinese, Indian, and European. The thinking goes that the Minang people adapted curries from India to their taste, ingredients and cuisines, with all of these other influences mixed in. One of the first known believed references to rendang traces back to the 8th century CE out of West Sumatra, though some speculate it was present, yes, in oral history as far back as the 4th century CE. And outsiders observe similarities to Indian cuisine in this dish by at least the 18th century. So there's that. As for the potential influence of Islam in this dish, a couple of sources linked the Islamic missionary movement in the area during the 16th and 17th centuries and the push for halal meats to the origins and evolutions of rendang. This is part of a long history of meat cooking and consumption in that region.
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated, but like researchers think that before the spread of Islam in the region, consumption of the traditional water buffalo or chicken would have been even more of a special occasion. Like prior to that influence, those animals would have been used for farm work and egg production rather than for eating.
Yes, yes. And actually, it's a fascinating history of just consumption of meat. It got me thinking when I was reading about it. I was like, one of the first written instances of the word rendang to refer to this dish comes from a 16th century Islam-influenced Malay manuscript.
Yeah, the manuscript in question was this Malay adaptation of a Persian classical literary text. So it's again showing that, like, although maybe no one local had been writing about it before then, this process and this dish were already well known at this time. And that was all the way over in Malacca, like across the whole island of Sumatra in the Malacca Strait from the Minangkabau region. Though notably, Malacca would have been like a center of business for traveling Minang traders who did use river routes to cross Sumatra and reach the sea for centuries before roads were built there. But that brings us to
the Portuguese element. Yes. The Portuguese controlled Malacca from 1511 to 1641, which many believe also impacted this dish. The Portuguese influence in the area includes words adopted in the Malay language in the realm of cooking. There's actually also a very detailed account of this that you can look into.
Oh, yeah.
And people arguing about whether or not that actually means what we think it means.
Uh-huh.
Which I do love. But yes, one of the biggest things that the Portuguese may have lended to this dish was their techniques and preferences in preserving meat by cooking it for a long time, a technique adapted by people in the region. They also probably introduced chili peppers. I actually couldn't nail that down completely, and I was sort of surprised by it, but probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, so those are some of the theories, influences going on. At first, the meat in this dish was primarily water buffalo, which was an important animal in the Minangkabau culture. Water buffalo is a tougher type of meat than something like beef, so to soften it and make it tastier, the meat would be braised in coconut milk, seasoned with spices, and then cooked low and slow for several hours. Higher temperatures would toughen the meat and curdle the milk, so you don't want that.
Nope.
No. Coconut trees lined the streets in West Sumatra, and as the region became more and more involved in the spice trade, indigenous folks would plant spices outside of their homes. So it stands to reason that those ingredients were relatively easy to come by. Once the meat was done, basically, yes, a sort of dry curry, it was often wrapped in plantain or banana leaves for transport. And the dish is said to be representative of the Minangkabau philosophy of patience in the cooking, wisdom, setting the fire and choosing the ingredients, and persistence or sincerity with the stirring. Because it was time-consuming to make, it was usually reserved for special occasions. On top of that, at the time, yeah, meat consumption was not very high amongst the Minang people, so it was by no means a daily thing.
Yeah.
Yes. And the fact that it could last on long journeys made it a popular travel food. So it spread throughout the region as people migrated. And as with many dishes that we talk about, that meant regional variants popped up based on ingredients and tastes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason for the spread of this dish has to do with a unique practice of the Minangkabau people called merentau, or voluntary migration. And this tradition of wandering is thought to be in part due to their matrilineal culture, where men were considered guests in their wives' homes. Therefore, ancestral land was passed down to women, not men. And because of this, many men, and some women, would travel with the hopes of getting more experience and economic opportunities. They travel via water on foot to nearby places like Singapore or Malaysia, and they brought the food of their homes with them, including the easily transportable rendang. I also found a source, I was having trouble wrapping my head around this, but said that they would write home and ask for it to be sent to them.
Yeah. I couldn't quite suss out what that I was like, but how would you ship it if you're not? Okay, sure. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was very curious about it, but hey. A professor of history at the University of Andalas in Sumatra named Gusti Anan has written a lot about all of this. He was a great source. And Anan is a big proponent that Indian curry had a big influence on rendang too, and points out that one word the Minang people use for one of the states of cooking of this dish resembles curry.
Yeah.
Yes. Because of established trade routes in the region with India, this dish made it over to that country. And once the British established a presence there, it made its way to the UK.
The dish also spread further west to the Arabian Peninsula, with West Sumatran Muslims making pilgrimages to Mecca.
Written accounts of rendang and its variations started popping up in 19th century European newspapers and travel journals. According to one of these accounts, the paste used to season chicken rendang included spices like pounded chili, turmeric, white cumin seed, and coriander seed, fried with sliced onion, and a little bit of water. Sounds really good to me. Chicken was then added, followed by coconut milk and cooking for a long time. Get the dish. Another version included garlic or ginger, and or ginger, I would say. Others, a sour juice of some sort. Others, fish. So already there were all these variations.
Yeah. The dish really began spreading, though, in the 1900s as more Minang immigrants began leaving home and opening food stalls throughout what was, well, at that time, the Dutch East Indies. Recipes for rendang appeared in Minang women's periodicals in the 19-teens, and cookbook authors working in other local languages and in Dutch started publishing recipes, too.
Yes, but during World War II, meat shortages slowed down the production of rendang in West Sumatra.
Though, interestingly, a Dutch military food service cookbook from 1940 listed a recipe for Padang-style rendang made with beef.
Huh. Yeah. Well, jumping way ahead to our social media controversy of the episode.
Oh, God.
Well, a MasterChef UK judge sparked outrage in 2018 when he commented that the Malaysian contestant's rendang was not crispy enough. And yes, it is not crispy at all.
No. Nope.
At the same time, the comment did cause some establishment in Indonesia, Singapore, and Malaysia to create a crispy version.
Oh, yeah. Folks from all of those three nations and also Brunei all piled on. It was, yeah. Yep.
Here's a quote from the BBC. The trendy lightbox sign at Singapore's indie cinema, The Projector, read, "Justice for Chicken Rendang," in April this year, echoing the hashtags that were blowing up on social media at the time. Hashtag Crispy Rendang and hashtag Rendanggate were uniting Malaysians and Indonesians who were utterly outraged at a diplomatic controversy. Whew.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't end there. Another chef on the show made it worse by posting to social media, "Maybe rendang is Indonesian," and what many saw as an attempt to get Indonesians and Malaysians to fight each other, basically inflame the situation.
Yeah.
Because there have been tensions between these places, but they for sure came together over this.
Oh, yes. As it turns out.
As it turns out.
Home-style meals are the thing that can really pull people together. Yeah. He also ended that tweet with namaste. Like, oh, my heck. Like, what an interesting human person.
Yeah. Like a lot of people got in on this. One actress with Minang ancestry argued, she kind of jokingly did this, or at least that was her vibe. But she was like, it's not from Indonesia or Malaysia, but West Sumatra and the Minang people.
Yeah. Yeah. She was like, I'm sorry. It's from neither. It's more local than that. Thank you. Thank you.
It was a whole thing.
Okay. That in 2019, the local government in West Sumatra announced that it was going to propose rendang for inclusion in UNESCO's World Heritage List. I think they succeeded in 2021. UNESCO's website was like kind of down today, so I couldn't double check that. But yes, I think that it is registered there, and I think it's registered as having come together from the cultural heritage of Padang. Then in 2020, at the Dubai 2020 Expo, Indonesia's government announced their Indonesia Spice Up the World initiative, which is promoting local cuisine and economic opportunities on the global stage. And rendang is one of the five specialties being highlighted. Just for example, this initiative managed to set up the first European rendang factory in Bulgaria this year, 2023. It was a $3 million investment meant to eventually produce some 30 metric tons of rendang a month for distribution throughout Europe and the Middle East.
Whew. Well, as the dish has spread around the world and grown in popularity, there have been all kinds of additions and preparations, some of which you mentioned, Lauren, that many would argue are not rendang. I raise my hands.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's one of those, we're backing away slowly. We would never tell you.
No.
We would not want to. We would not if we could. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a really cute quote in one of the articles about crispy rendang gate on BBC.com. The quote was from this proprietor of an Indonesian restaurant in Singapore. He was all like, some people come and they ask for curry sauce with it. I tell them, if you want curry sauce, you can go to McDonald's.
There's something you got to respect about that. Like, no.
Yeah, like, no, that's not how it's served. Sorry.
Get that elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was in the same article that was like, you're never going to top your, what you had growing up, essentially.
Yeah.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. Well, it was delicious. I'm glad I had the opportunity to try it. But there's so much more, obviously, that I could try.
Yeah.
In this space. So.
Yep.
Again, yep, listeners, thoughts, recipes,
recommendations.
ID. Oh, yeah. Yes. Please let us know. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what we have to say about rendang for now.
It is. We do have some listener mail prepared already for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsors.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. It was so warming. That's what I really thought about it.
Yeah, like a big old hug of meat. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was like, it wasn't that it was spicy, but it was warming.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was so good. I immediately sent Lauren a message and was like, oh no, this is delicious.
It was like Friday or Saturday night. I get this random message from Annie. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, so good. I was so happy.
Heck yeah.
Yes. Oh. All right. Carolina wrote, I was excited to hear your dragon fruit episode. I love this crazy fruit.
Yeah.
I get cravings for it sometimes. When I was living in Utah, it wasn't easy to find, and I could only find the white flesh variety. I'm currently living in Taiwan, where every fruit market has it year-round, and red dragon fruit, which has a stronger flavor, is far more common. The magenta color of the juice doesn't get altered by going through digestion, so eating red dragon fruit can result in an uncommonly startling trip to the bathroom if you don't have a good memory for what you've recently consumed. Oh, that is good to know.
Yeah.
It's good to know.
I do. I've had that experience with beets any number of times. But still, right. Important safety tip.
Yes. Yes. I had a friend who had it. She loved watermelon so much. I don't think watermelon is common to do that, but she loved it so much.
Oh. Huh.
It would. But I did see, I didn't buy one, but I did see some dragon fruit at the store when I was there yesterday.
Oh,
and I thought about it. I think I'm going to wait for whenever we have our dinner or a special occasion or something.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
But I am excited. It does look
good.
Cool.
It does. They're real pretty. Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Oh. Bart wrote, Bart from Ireland, back with another Christmas-related comment. I always seem to email around the holidays for some reason. Lots of good food memories associated with the season, I guess. Listening to your show this week on Chinese Five Spice, two things struck me. Firstly, I'm so used to it being ubiquitous that I was shocked to hear it's a recent arrival to our Western pantries. Secondly, you asked about recipes, and what immediately struck me is that it's one of those rare ingredients I use in dessert and dinner. I prefer to do this with tender stem broccoli, but it works with any green veg, really. Toss it in some sesame oil, a little soy sauce, a sprinkling of dark brown sugar, and a dash of Chinese five spice. Roast for 15 to 20 minutes, and you have a fantastic side for any Asian dish. Being here in Ireland, one of the Christmas treats I love is the dried fruit mix that briefly appears on our shelves each year. It's intended for use in traditional Christmas cakes, but I use it in fruit-based desserts instead. As well as your usual mix of currants and raisins of all sizes and colors, it includes dried cherries and some wonderfully exotic additions like dates and preserved citrus peels. One of my favorite uses for this mix is stuffed baked apples. Start by hollowing out a tart firm apple, like a Granny Smith, by going halfway down with a corer, and then scooping out the bits with a melon baller. Then score a line around the equator so it can expand as it bakes. Next, stuff it with a mix of chopped dried fruit, maple syrup, dark soft brown sugar, and slices of your choice. Optionally, add a dash of vanilla and or almond extract. Then bake it low for about 40 minutes and top with cream or Greek yogurt. This works with any dried fruit and any warming spices. So for Halloween, I love to use dried cranberries and pumpkin spice. But at Christmas, the very best variant is Christmas cake fruit mix with Chinese five spice. By pure chance, I'm opening this year's bag of Christmas cake fruit mix to make this very recipe with Sunday dinner tonight. Thanks for many years of thoughtful, informative, and above all, fun listening pleasure. You folks rock. Have a wonderful holiday season and a healthy, tasty, and prosperous 2024.
Oh, thanks. You too.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Oh, heck.
That sounds really good.
It does sound really good. I feel like that specific like Christmas cake dried fruit mix is something that I am aware of existing, but I don't feel like we really get it in America. I don't think that it shows up. I think it's kind of like a specialty item you kind of have to track down.
Yeah, I think so. And I feel like we talked about that in the fruit cake episode, the much maligned fruit cake here in the U.S., which is experiencing a little bit of a comeback, but, yeah, it's true. Like this sounds so good to me, but it's not like anything I have tried personally.
I mean, you could make your, I mean, with a decent, bulk good section, you could make your own dry fruit mix and
that's true.
You know,
this is true. It can be done.
You would have a lot of it at that juncture, probably. But
yes. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of when we did our episode on cranberries. Mm-hmm. And I got it in my head that I'm going to make my own homemade cranberry sauce. Turns out your own homemade cranberry sauce makes a ton. But it was delicious and I loved doing it. But I stopped doing it because it just made so much.
Yeah, it depends on how much you want to consume. And like, I mean, even like a single bag of cranberries kind of makes a lot of sauce. I mean, it depends on how much you want to consume. So like,
yeah, true. But I feel like if I made this, it would be me eating it and like trying to get other people to get on board. And they probably would, but they wouldn't eat that much. With my cranberry sauce, which I think was delicious, everybody was like, I'll try a tiny bit.
Oh, aw.
Yeah. Jeez. But this sounds really good to me.
Yeah. And that veg recipe sounds terrific as well.
Oh my gosh, it does.
I feel like I shy away from five spice in the kitchen. But maybe I should. I think that really like the idea of just having a light hand with it is what I needed to hear. So yeah.
Yes. Yes. And like I said, I did purchase some. So I am looking for recipes.
Yeah. Okay.
But also, you know, I feel like we have enough recipes now. We can make a savory cookbook. We never would because the work and time and crediting all of you, but we could do it.
We could do it. We could do it. I mean, you know, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could also, I mean, man, Ben Bolin has been threatening to get us a cookbook deal.
Well, I love it. I just love, because I know some of you have written in, like, I made this person's recipe and that's so cool. Huh. It's just cool to hear.
It really is.
People's recipes and then hearing other people make them. So thank you for taking the time.
Yes. Always. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.